Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Cho. I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Awesome. We're just talking about how we're recording now in the afternoon and we're feeling a little bit of an energy lag. I don't know if you guys have an afternoon slump. For me, it's a nice quiet time when my kids are asleep. So we wanted to shift it from mornings to afternoon. But then I'm noticing I have to gather some energy to bring to you all. But we're excited and grateful to be here with you guys. And today we're going to be talking about signs that you are dealing with a narcissist. So thank you guys for coming back here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We're the number one resource for couples in the world. And we want to thank each and every one of you as we strive to fulfill our mission to help thousands of couples create a thriving marriage. Now, what Mark and I are going to share with you today might surprise you. Honestly, I feel like we're going to be going against the grain about what you've probably heard about narcissism. I don't know about you, Mark, but I seem to hear this word at least a dozen times or more a week. Maybe That's just because we deal with marriages and couples so much, but I think there's a huge misunderstanding about what narcissism really is. And we're going to share with you what actually works when you feel like your spouse is being selfish or self-centered. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah, this one starts off a little bit on, but so this person was saying, hey, your feelings are shut down constantly. This is in quotes. She says, yes, I imagine they are because they don't care about your feelings at the moment and can't see past their own agenda, sadly. She goes on to say, I'm not saying it's right or fair, but they have clearly checked out of your marriage. So if you want to have a shot at saving your marriage, then you need to stop trying to tell them how you feel about everything and listen to how they are feeling and what they are saying and try to empathize with them and truly understand how they got to this point of wanting a divorce. If you can afford to do any of the High Thrive coaching programs, then I highly recommend it. From someone who has saved her marriage after 2 years apart, good luck to you. And I liked this comment because it's not just like, hey, things can work, but it was some actual useful advice. This is a big part of what we teach with a lot of our clients is be like, hey, you need to step back a little bit from your own feelings and your own hurt and, you know, listen for a bit before you can fix things. And it's an important lesson that a lot of people need to learn here in this situation. So glad that we had this comment here.
Agreed. She is like an A+ student to me. And I know a lot of you have been following us for a while. And so you're probably fairly familiar with our PATH method, but she really nails it here when she says you need to stop telling them how to feel about everything and listen to how they are feeling and what they are saying and try to empathize and truly understand how they got to the point of wanting a divorce. So she definitely nailed the first part of the PATH process, which is perspective. Mm-hmm. All right. So Mark, we asked people in our group, can you have a healthy relationship with a narcissist? And we had 88 people vote no, 25 people vote it depends, and 10 people voted it's possible.
Wow.
And then we had a ton of comments here about, yes, I'm married to one and it's impossible. Yeah.
Well, so I found the comments interesting. And I think some people were ahead of the game a little bit with some of the things that, you know, we wanted to talk about even today. I saw several that were pointing out that there's actually very few people with actual diagnosable narcissistic personality disorder. And I looked up some numbers. I looked into official things here and there. There it is. I was even looking up into my trusty DSM thing here, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental disorder. But like I saw some varying numbers around. It's fairly small. At the highest I saw reported is around 0.5% of the population. And I did see as low as 0.1, which I actually saw comments saying those exact numbers. So they must be looking in very similar places as I was. And that was kind of part of the reasoning why we wanted to talk about this, right, Heather? Because I don't know, maybe you all are just getting the really difficult cases, maybe. But my assumption here is that there's probably a lot more concerns about narcissism rather than actual cases of narcissism. And like, why is that happening? What might be happening instead? And like, is there some small adjustments that you can make to get around some of that really damaging behavior? And that's kind of like the whole point of the discussion today.
Yeah. And so as you guys are listening, like leave a comment if you feel like you are in a relationship with a narcissist, or you feel like you know narcissists, or if it's just a word that you hear very frequently as well. You know, Mark and I have been doing this for about 6.5 years. And over the last probably 3 years, this word has definitely increased. It's like a big buzzword out there. There's a lot of hype about it. And I just hear it being thrown around by friends and family members and, of course, clients and our audience. Yeah. And even my son, who is 15, talks about narcissists all the time. I guess there's a bunch of memes out there and a bunch of comedians that think this is a really funny thing. But he is constantly being like, "Mom, you're a narcissist. Dad, you're a narcissist." I'm like, "Okay, son, let's talk about what that really means. And then let's be careful how we use any word or any label," right? And he still thinks it's just funny though. So whatever, that's his 15-year-old humor. Sure. But I hear this word a lot and there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. So if you feel like you're in a relationship with a narcissist, let us know. And if you hear a lot about this, what have you heard people are talking about when they're talking about narcissism?
Yeah, like just to kind of give perspective, like a real life example here. Like, so in terms of like friends and family who have gone through divorce, talking with partner, you know, either one of the partners, it seems to me like in real life, the way people are making claims, it almost seemed like, I would guess just off the top of my head, if I had to pull a number of like how many people I've seen in my personal life who've gone through divorce and how many claims of narcissism there are, I would say it's probably around 50 or 60%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a lot higher than what all the statistics are saying in terms of like what the actual amount of people in the world who are dealing with this sort of issue. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Mark, last week and this week, we're addressing some pretty serious concerns, right, within marriage. Last week, we talked briefly about abuse and signs of abuse and what really is abuse and maybe what's not, but maybe some other, you know, dysfunctional behaviors that need to be addressed. And this week, we're discussing narcissist personality disorder. And before we get into that, Mark, just clarify what this actually is, because we hear narcissism almost as a synonym for selfishness or self-centeredness, or I don't really care how you feel about this, but it does not mean the same thing as a true narcissist personality disorder, which is actually the true meaning of this term.
Yes. And I want to point out before we get, like, I actually do want to discuss the actual symptoms. And to do that, I have this book by my side because I was like, oh, I'm actually going to look up the actual criteria for what this is. But before we get into that, I just want to point out that a lot of these diagnoses, this was drilled into my head like over and over again, like, hey, a diagnosis is almost never going to fit, like people aren't going to fit neatly into these little boxes. So the way a lot of the diagnostic criteria work, it says, okay, here's a situation like, say, depression. And it says, okay, you have to meet 3 out of the following 10 symptoms to be diagnosed with this thing. Or you need to be, in this case, it was like 5 out of, I can't remember if it was like 12 listed symptoms, but I do recall that it was at least 5 of the symptoms. And the thing is, people very rarely fit neatly into the exact criteria that is laid out in these things. And there's a lot of subjectivity to this because people are just plain complicated. That's just how it is. But it also means that in a lot of things, a lot of mental health issues sit somewhere on a spectrum. And actually, the DSM-5 kind of moved a little bit more towards spectrums. You see this in things like autism, where we no longer actually have an official diagnosis of Asperger's disorder. It's all kind of under an umbrella of like autism spectrum disorder. And that's why we say, hey, they're on the spectrum, because I think this came out, but I want to say like around 2008 was when they switched to the DSM-5. But that's like when they started actually recognizing a little bit more spectrum officially on a lot of these things. I want to point out like the main difference here between like when we're talking about in terms of, okay, is this selfishness or is this narcissism? The main difference between an official diagnosis a lot of times or more normal problems is how much do these issues negatively impact everyday life, work, relationships, school, et cetera. Personality disorders, like what we're talking about in terms of narcissistic personality disorder, are a little bit more extreme in most cases in that it tends to be pervasive and it tends to be long lasting, tends to show up early in life. And, you know, unless there's a lot of serious work done, tends to be an issue for a good chunk of life. So I also want to point out that while we're talking about a lot of these things, while we do deal with relationship problems every day, don't take this information and use it to diagnose your partner. I would really recommend against that. Our intention is to provide information so that you can decide whether you need to look more closely at some of these issues. So Heather, you know, I put it in here into the notes. You want to kind of go over some of the actual descriptions and criteria for diagnosing? Because I'd be happy to.
I am going to read this right off here.
All right.
So I don't botch it. So an official description in the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, states that this is a pervasive pattern of grandiosity and fantasy or behavior, a need for admiration and lack of empathy beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts, as displayed by at least five of the following symptoms. A grandiose sense of self-importance, is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, believes that he, she is special and unique and can only be understood or associate with other special people, requires excessive admiration, has a sense of entitlement, unreasonable expectations of favorable treatment, is interpersonally exploitative, there we go. Lacks empathy, unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others, is often envious of others or believes they are envious of them, shows arrogant, haughty behaviors and attitudes.
So there we have. I mean, if you listen to this, I mean, these are some serious symptoms here. This is not like, oh, well, this person is acting a bit selfish because, you know, they wanted some time for themselves, or they didn't want to help me out with my, you know, my gardening. And so therefore, you know, they must be a narcissist because I really wanted them to help out with my gardening project or whatever it happens to be.
Right. So, or even that they're having an affair and they're not keeping their vow to me. That means they're a narcissist.
And so like what I will sometimes see is we might see maybe some hints at one of these symptoms. And then here's this label.
Yeah.
And so why we wanted to list off the symptoms here is because we frequently hear people saying that their spouse is a narcissist. And it's generally a difficult thing to treat. When I was looking it up, you know, I was looking at a lot of like the statistics on this, and it said generally anywhere from about 2 to 6% of people with this disorder seek out treatment. Mm-hmm. It's because, you know, that it's kind of the nature of personality disorders, is because people like it's a little bit more part of who they are. And so a lot of times if they're dealing with this issue, then they, a lot of times there's an, it isn't perceived as there's a need to do anything about it. Right. So like I said, why we want to list off the symptoms is because if you incorrectly place this label on a situation, if you have extreme or highly charged labels like this, it can lead to a lot of other issues that are unnecessary, because you might say, okay, well, I can't work with my spouse. They're a narcissist. Or this is an extreme issue. There's nothing to be done about it.
Yep.
And that's a bit more of the issue that we're trying to avoid, is this sense of hopelessness, when in many cases, it's not a personality disorder. Mm-hmm. It's more like, hey, someone is stressed and they're displaying some selfish tendencies. It's just that there are a lot of instances when approaching people who are displaying these selfish tendencies with actual good, like the correct methods, might make a huge difference. Yeah. Where a personality disorder issue, like narcissistic personality disorder, is going to take a ton of patience, a ton of work, and a lot of time. And so we want to like distinguish those two situations.
Yeah. Mark, I don't know about you, but one thing that I notice when we're labeling our spouse or diagnosing our spouse with one of these really, you know, highly charged labels, this really extreme condition here, is that it's really removing accountability from ourselves in the situation, and it's putting us into the drama triangle, typically into the victim role of like, I'm a victim to this person. They are a narcissist, and oh, poor me. And there's nothing I can do about it. They need to change. That is the kind of approach that I see most people coming at when they say their spouse is a narcissist. Sure. Is they're wanting your sympathy. They're wanting other people to say, oh, poor you, it must be so hard. And they're not wanting to take accountability for their part in the situation. So I hope that at this point, we can agree that true narcissistic personality disorder is very, very, very rare. And that more often what's going on are some unhealthy, potentially selfish behaviors that your spouse is doing. And you don't really want to take accountability for your part in it, or you want to feel like you're a victim here. And so you label them as a narcissist, and it kind of seems like a scapegoat or a way to say, ah, bummer, nothing I can do. Woe is me. It's not my fault. And it keeps you stuck in that drama triangle. It keeps you stuck in unhealthy patterns that really aren't serving you. And so what Mark's saying here is that when we can deal with those maybe selfish tendencies in the correct way, like with the correct method, it can make a huge difference. And it can completely turn around the situation when you learn to step out of the drama triangle, when you have accountability for your part, and you realize that your spouse isn't one of those 0.5% of the population that's a true narcissist. We remove that label, we're going to free up a lot of energy and space and potential for the relationship to heal and move forward.
Yeah. And I want to point out that we're not implying here at all that this doesn't exist, that none of you are dealing with this, or that, you know, even if it's not this official diagnosis, that there aren't challenges or that your partner is not acting selfishly. Don't want to imply that at all. I can imagine that in a lot of these instances, you know, even if the label is there and even if the label is applied incorrectly, that these are probably very, very difficult situations and that your partner is probably acting in very unhealthy ways and causing some damage. And we want to make sure that the right solutions are applied. That's what we're trying to say. Agreed. So when is this not narcissism then, Heather?
So selfish behavior is not necessarily narcissism. Focusing on one's own needs at the cost of others is not necessarily narcissism. And being proud of your life accomplishments is not necessarily narcissism. Mark, when is it more likely to actually be narcissism?
So, like you're pointing out here, Heather, there are some things that kind of lean in that direction, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily a mental health disorder, but it is more likely to be that when there's like what I look for, it would be like if there's like an intense discomfort or anger around feedback. Negative feedback or just even positive feedback. Like if you're just trying to comment on what they're doing and there's a huge, huge, huge amount of like discomfort around there. Because, you know, like one of the characteristics here is this idea that, okay, the person with a disorder like this is special and they're above other people. And, you know, how dare someone else comment on how you're doing something wrong? So if there's a lot of discomfort around that, or anger around that, that's certainly a sign to look into. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's exactly this. If they see no issue whatsoever when their actions benefit themselves at the cost of others, and this is going on that symptom of like, okay, there's some lack of empathy here. Mm-hmm. I have encountered cases where I strongly suspect that there's narcissistic personality disorder. And it's almost like, okay, it's not, there's just no emotion at all. Like, hey, this person has screwed someone else over. And it's like, okay, well, whatever. I wanted to get this extra money for myself, or I wanted to get more out of the divorce deal. And it doesn't matter if they're left destitute or things like that. If there is a lot of emotion, like demands of preference or priority over others, you know, most people kind of understand that there's some give and take, that sometimes other people need to be a priority, that other times other people's needs are more important. And if there's a lot of discomfort, like confusion or a lot of emotion around other people getting some amount of preference here and there, that's another instance where we might want to look into it. You know, there is with a lot of people, I think there's some amount of pride and being proud of accomplishments, but I think it turns into this unhealthy realm where there's looking down on others for their lack of whatever it happens to be. And so like kind of what we're getting at here is sometimes there's like a healthy side to things. Having some pride in accomplishments is sometimes a good thing. Having pride in your accomplishments to the point where other people are less than you is generally unhealthy, or, you know, focusing on your own needs and protecting yourself can sometimes be considered a good thing. Doing so at the expense of others is, and that's usually where the line is. Mm-hmm. How much are you looking out for yourself? And is there consideration for how that impacts other people? Tends to be the line. So I think we've been kind of talking about how, like, there are some sometimes healthy behaviors here. Like, I don't know, Heather, if you agree to this, but like, I think in some ways we also, some levels of narcissism, I'm going to put that in quotes here. I don't know, like, do you see that at all? Do we see some level of this in most every person? Is it sometimes just blown out of proportion? What do you think?
Yeah, I was just thinking about myself and every of those things you just said, you know, discomfort around negative feedback. I mean, don't we all have some level of discomfort around negative feedback? You know, we're very rarely are we completely zen about that. And we're like, oh yes, please tell me all my faults and all my weaknesses and how that bothered you and upset you, right? And so you definitely see a lot of these things. And sometimes we're saying, you know, maybe I am a little better than that person. And we have a little bit of that inflated pride. Does that mean we have a personality disorder? No, but it's fitting in the cultural, so I'm going to call this like a difference here between the cultural definition or understanding of narcissism versus like the scientific or medical understanding of narcissism, right? And the reality is that we all have some times when we are selfish or when we're thinking more about ourselves or when our ego might be a little inflated, right? And it can be explained by something much less serious than a personality disorder. So the cultural understanding of the word narcissism is not accurate when it comes to the medical or scientific explanation of what narcissism is. But yeah, we see this happen a lot. Like at the end of the day, ego means to protect the self, right? It's all about self and protecting mm-hmm. self. And we are all, at the end of the day, selfish creatures because we're human beings and you can't help but look through the lens of your own experience. Does that mean that's the only place you can stay? No, but it's our brain's primary job is to protect the self. And so more often than not, we see in a relationship where you feel like your spouse is being very selfish or even narcissistic, and you actually look at yourself, you'll see that you're doing very much same things, maybe not in the same ways, but you're still thinking about self. In fact, I'm going to do a bit of a reality check here. Okay. When you're saying, like, oh, they are selfish, they are self-centered. They're only thinking about themselves. You're actually looking at it through the lens of selfishness yourself because you're still labeling them and you're still judging them. And it's still that they need to change instead of what we do, which we're going to get into in a little bit later, with the PATH method of gaining perspective into what's really going on for them. So Mark, what have you seen as far as, like, we all tend to show at least some levels of the cultural understanding of what narcissism is?
Well, like we've been talking about, I think there are moments where we can all kind of be a little bit more selfish or self-centered. I know, like I personally, sometimes that's even like going in the other direction can be seen as a bad thing. You know, I sometimes have to work on being as this myself, like I'm patting myself on the back, like being too accommodating or like, but like the reality is like that can sometimes be a problem as well, being too flexible or not standing up for yourself. And I see that in a lot of relationships where that dynamic sort of develops, that where someone is too accommodating and someone who's a little bit more comfortable speaking up their opinion throws the balance a bit off. And then that person who is speaking up for themselves is labeled as selfish. But I think a big part of this, what, you know, where we can actually get to some point of health is, or determine if this is a really serious issue, is there some ability to step away from some of those unhealthy behaviors, to examine other people's needs, to give priority to other people? Because like the true disorder here, it's a lot less likely to have some ebb and flow or some ability to step away from that. Yeah. So I think like a big part of this then is the circumstances that create more selfish or narcissistic behavior. Especially if those sort of circumstances can much better explain the situation, you know, and make it a lot less serious. So I don't know, can you think of like certain situations, certain scenarios or circumstances that might create more selfish behavior, Heather?
Trying to think, you kind of put me on the spot there. But we talked about like really high stress situations. And I'm thinking about the limbic system of the brain, right? So that when we're in a high stress situation, our body goes into kind of like trauma and we go into fight, flight, or freeze mode, which then becomes all about the self. It's about protecting self. And we turn off the reasoning part of our mind, kind of like our higher selves, right? And so anytime we're stepping into high levels of stress, depression, anxiety, we're much more likely to see problems with selfish or narcissistic behaviors, because that's what the brain is programmed to do. It's programmed to think about the self. Mm-hmm. And if we keep in a state like that, then that's all we're going to get. You know, we have to choose deliberately to go into our higher reasoning part of ourselves to step out of those behaviors.
Yeah, I think, I like your point here. Like you're talking about how high stress situations or depression or anxiety can sometimes create this sort of thing. What's interesting, you know, when I was looking up information on this, it seems like there's a super high comorbidity, meaning like co-occurring sort of issues between narcissistic personality disorder and a few other things. Like, you know, if there's mood disorders like depression, bipolar disorder, things like that. People with narcissistic personality disorder tend to be diagnosed with that. Anxiety disorders, substance abuse, eating disorders. Notice here, like you ramp up all these other things and you're much more likely to have some selfish behavior. maybe even approaching unhealthy mental health sort of issues, sort of selfish behavior. And I think that's in many cases a much better way to explain some of this narcissistic behavior, is that we've ramped up all the other negative issues in one's life so that, you know, they respond with this unhealthy yuck here and being a lot more self-centered. My experience has been that when we create a little bit more safety and we can address some of the other side issues going on, the selfish behavior tends to drop quite dramatically.
Yeah. So Mark, I'm curious, because we have a lot, I'm curious from our audience and I'm curious from you too, Mark, as you guys have been listening to this, has it given you some clarity about what true narcissistic mood disorder actually, or personality disorder actually is, versus what you might be seeing from your partner? And let us know what kind of thoughts have come to you. If this has helped you get some clarity, if you found this valuable, of course, give this video a thumbs up. We would appreciate it. And let us know if this is helpful for you. And at this point now, are you realizing that maybe it's not true narcissism? Maybe it is an unhealthy amount of the selfish behavior. And so, Mark, I'm curious, because we hear a lot of people labeling their spouse as a narcissist. Have you ever had a client that came to you at the beginning and said, my husband or my wife is a narcissist? And then maybe after the next couple of weeks of working with them and working on why their spouse is exhibiting very selfish, self-centered behavior, they actually realized what was going on. And then that behavior changed. Is there a case study or an example?
Yeah. So I'll say the tendency is actually kind of the opposite situation, that because the nature of our audience, we generally have people who are wanting the marriage to work out working with us. So what I tend to see more often is our clients, and they are put into a situation where their spouse says that they are a narcissist. And, you know, I'm looking at that and I can almost always fairly dismiss it right off the bat, because, you know, they come in and they're exhibiting a lot of concern over, you know, about how their partner feels, which, you know, and they're saying, okay, I'm sad that they're upset and sad that they've been hurt by this, and I want to do some things that are different. And like already here, I'm saying, okay, all this empathy and concern for their partner and what their partner wants tells me that there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of like these negative stories that have built up. So what we do in those sort of cases, you know, I always want to examine. You know, we talk about, you mentioned like the PATH method here, and it's always best to start off like understanding, okay, what are the actual concerns here? If they're saying narcissism, what does that actually mean? What is actually going on? Do they think that you're being selfish because you're taking some time for yourself? Or do you think that you're selfish because you are wanting 50% of the assets, you know, because your partner is wanting a divorce or whatever it happens to be? We have to actually get a distinction here between what the facts are and what the story is that they're saying. I do think that a lot of times I split this down into a few different things that are needed. We're needing to, you know, one, actually address the actual solvable problems that are there, because oftentimes there are real things that are causing pain. I do think that there's some need to challenge some of the negative stories that are out there. So once you've actually made some changes, and very likely, this is what we see all the time, your partner holds on to the story that you're not going to change, then that you're still this way, even though you've made some changes, we need a period where we're challenging that. And then we need a period where we're kind of pulling down some of the boundaries that have popped up, some of the walls that have been created to protect the other partner, and say, hey, look, we can pull these walls down, things are going to be safe. There's a bit of a process, a bit of an arc when we are trying to deal with these kind of cases. And it's hard to give like a very specific step here, because everyone's a little bit different, and these sort of cases really need some close examination.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. So from what I hear you share is that people that are labeling their spouse as a narcissist, when you address maybe some of the behaviors that are causing pain and that can be very, you know, unhealthy and reduce some of that tension, then that quote unquote selfish behavior resolves itself. That you've seen that happen in couples before. Is that right?
It kind of does. Like, you address the pain, but like I said, my experience is that people still hold on to the label for a bit.
Yeah, the label. Longer. Okay.
So you might have made the changes and they're like, well, you're still a narcissist. Okay. Well, you, the label itself, oftentimes there's, you know, it needs some time for your partner to let go of that. And, you know, we have oftentimes like some really good suggestions on how to challenge those specific labels. It needs to be done very carefully. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we help you do, is help your spouse to create a new story about you. So leave a comment if your spouse is the one that's saying that you're a narcissist, because that's a little bit of a different take than we had at the beginning of this. So that's very, very insightful. So thank you, Mark. So if you feel like your spouse is selfish, if you feel like they're being checked out, if they're uncaring, and that is commonly what is actually going on when someone says or thinks that they're spouse is a narcissist, right? I would say, you know, a high amount of our clients start with a spouse that are acting like that. We have about 85 to 90% of our clients start working on the marriage alone because their partner isn't willing to work on the marriage with them. They're engaging in selfish behavior. They're having an affair. They say they're done. They want out. They're not willing to work on it with you. And that can often make you feel like they're being very selfish and only caring about their own needs and what they want, and that they're kind of just leaving you out to dry, right? Which can be, of course, very, very painful. But again, go back to that reality check. And then if you're labeling your spouse as a narcissist or saying they are just being selfish, think about, why are you labeling them that way? What are you benefiting in a way by saying that? Is it so that you don't have to take accountability for your part? Is it so that you don't feel like you have to keep doing this because it's hopeless? And so now you've got like a way out. So you don't have to work on the marriage because you're saying, oh, well, this is a hopeless situation. So it's kind of an easy way out of something. Really think about, why are you labeling this person as a narcissist, or why are you labeling them as being selfish? And recognize that when we're doing that, we're actually looking at it through the lens of selfishness ourselves. And what we want to do is step out of that drama triangle, out of the victim, usually is the position that we're taking in the drama triangle with this situation, and go to the first part of the PATH method, which is getting perspective. Remember the client win at the beginning? She's like, stop trying to tell your husband what to think and how to feel, and actually understand, why are they wanting out, and have some empathy for what they are going through. So a label never really solves anything, right? A label is a way to have problems perpetuate and have disconnection perpetuate. When we look beyond what's actually causing us to feel that way about our partner, to want to give them that label, what's driving their behaviors, that is how we are able to create some solutions. And like Mark said, things can change in a huge way when you go about it in that way. So that's just the tip of the iceberg here. If you guys want to see how we help your spouse go from being potentially very selfish, very cold, very checked out, to actually wanting to be with you again, wanting to make you happy, wanting to meet your needs, and wanting to have a healthy, functional relationship, then I want you to take action and claim a free marriage analysis session with us. And in this marriage analysis session, we'll help you understand exactly what's going through their mind when they're exhibiting this selfish behavior, and why they may not be putting in as much effort right now, and some of the things that you can do to get them trying again. We'll help you understand why they haven't recommitted to the marriage yet, and some of the things that you may be doing that may be unintentionally actually pushing them further away. The simple psychology that gets them actually wanting you again and wanting to work on the marriage with you, and how to build up their desire so that they're the one that's initiating contact and what they really mean if you've heard them say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. In the marriage analysis, we can help reveal the difference between the two. And of course, talk to you about what your next steps are. So go ahead and claim your free marriage analysis if you have not done so already at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. Now, I know we're very full this week, so spots may be gone. So encourage you that if this speaks to you, to go ahead and do it right away. That's highthrivecoaching.com/apply. All right, Mark, let's go on to our marriage mythbuster. Our marriage mythbuster today is that marriage should always be equal, or marriage is always equal.
Yeah, it's this idea, you know, I'm gonna insert a word here, that marriage should be equal. And it's that idea that is actually sometimes problematic. Mm-hmm. If you get really kind of deeper into psychology theory, there is a list, they're called cognitive distortions, and there's a common list of cognitive distortions, and essentially it is a list of errors in thinking that generally cause problems. And one of the very common ones on these lists is this idea of should, like in this case, here's a should, like marriage should be equal. And the common counter to that is, well, says who? And like, where are you coming up with this rule? And, you know, so the counter is to say, okay, well, this is more of a preference. But like the idea here, let's get to the idea of marriage. Let's even assume that, you know, we all kind of agree that marriage should be equal. The truth of it is that a lot of times we can take a lot of effort and we can strive to make things fair, but it tends to be an impossible task to always make everything equal. There's bound to be some ebb and flow, just for a whole lot of different reasons. You know, children coming into the picture tends to create some really differing sort of circumstances. Maybe someone is injured. Maybe someone loses their job. Maybe someone becomes sick. And this is just kind of, I'm just listing off common sort of occurrences that happen to just about everyone that really throw that equality out the window within the marriage. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, well, why would this need to be a concern anyway? Like, why would we strive for this equality when the reality is it's not really going to get there at any point realistically? Actually, I'm going to even point out before I get into that, I would even say like trying too hard to make things always equal tends to be a problem in and of itself. We call this scorekeeping, and it's generally within couples counseling very much looked down upon. But like what I'm getting at here is like, why would we want to keep this equal? Why would that matter? And usually when we look behind some of these things, we get to like the true motives. And a lot of times this is very much about wanting to feel respected, wanting to feel some support from someone else, wanting to be able to make some adjustments when things are feeling too disproportionate. And so I would say like the reality here isn't that marriage should be equal or is always equal, but like where the truth here lies and like what's the healthy principle behind this is that being able to have some healthy feedback and open communication, making sure that people are able to make requests and feel supported is what allows a couple to navigate things successfully when they do become overly unequal. So that's Agreed. My Thank marriage you. Mythbuster for today.
I love that so much. Yep. And I've been there myself where I go into a bit of the scorekeeping and trying to make sure that my husband's giving as much as I'm giving and he's, you know, and it really always comes from a place of insecurity and untruth. But if you uncover reasons why, it's because we want to feel secure. We want to feel important. We want to feel respected. We want to feel understood. We want to feel valued. And there's healthier ways of going about that. And it doesn't have to look equal because that's impossible. And like Mark said, striving for that is going to create those problems in and of themselves. So it's more like, what are you needing? What am I needing? How do we work together as a team? How do we have that open communication and that open feedback so that we can really work together? to create a thriving marriage. All right. So thank you so much, Mark. If you guys loved this, if you found something helpful, if you learned something today, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe if you want to see more videos just like this. Go ahead and leave a comment on a topic you would love for us to address in the future. We love to hear your comments and anything else that you guys want to share with us about what may be going on in your marriage. We answer every single one of your comments here on Facebook and in YouTube. So go ahead and leave a comment. Let us know what's going on for you. And we will get you some coaching right away on what to do about that. If you feel like you are someone who's experiencing these things that we talked about today with narcissism, or wondering if your spouse is a narcissist, or your spouse is saying you're a narcissist and you want to join a community of like-minded people that are working to create amazing relationships, then join our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And of course, make sure you claim your free marriage assessment call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. So next week, we're going to share with you how to have the love your heart craves. Thank you so much, Mark. And we will talk to you guys next week.
See everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.